I've just been involved in Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, which was like the example that everybody holds up of drama really changing things. And that was a wonderful experience. But to actually see it happening and experience it happening in real time, it makes it extra special.
If this story was a fictionalized story from James Graham, no one would believe it. The fact that it's true, it just resonates on so many levels and challenges on so many levels.
My name is Jacob Dunn. I'm an author, campaigner, and educator in restorative justice. In 2011, I threw a single punch that ended another man's life. And after 14 months in prison, I found myself homeless, unemployed, and struggling to find a sense of purpose. But I managed to get my life back on track, and now I help others do the same. Join me on this first season of Right From Wrong, where I speak to the people who were instrumental in my journey from punishment to redemption. This is Right From Wrong. It is so lovely to have you back for a further episode of Right From Wrong. In this one, I have the honour of bringing two incredible actors onto the show. We were there on the set of Punch, a play at the Nottingham Playhouse written by James Graham, who we will be hearing from in the next episode of this series. Julie Hesmondhouse plays the role of Joan, the mother of the man I punched, who we heard from in a previous episode of the podcast. Since meeting Julie on the first day of rehearsals for Punch, I can honestly say she's probably the second most compassionate and inspiring woman I have ever met, second only to the real-life character she is playing in Punch, of course. But I have great reason to be biased on that one. Julie is best known for the much-loved character Hayley in Coronation Street, where she eventually played the first transgender character in a British soap opera. And more recently, her role as Mrs. Bates in the hit TV drama Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, as well as a long list of other accolades and charity work that would probably take up the remainder of the time we have available to read out. I'm excited to say we have the equally talented actor with an equally long pedigree with us today in the form of Tony Hurst, who is playing the role of David in Punch, the father of James, who I tragically punched and later met with as part of the restorative justice process. Tony is an actor, theatre director and narrator, best known for his roles as Mike Barnes on the soap opera Hollyoaks and as Paul Kershaw in Coronation Street. I am so grateful for them both being part of Punch, helping tell this story on stage, and for sparing some time to talk with me despite having an evening performance a few hours after. So without further ado, please welcome Julie and Tony to the show. Julie and Tony, welcome to Right From Wrong, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you.
What have you both got yourself into, eh?
Well, we've got ourselves into an amazing thing, something that I think has completely transcended anything that we could have hoped for. When you get offered a job like this one, you hope that it has enough to say about the world, that it starts really important conversations, and that along the way you learn from it as well and your world gets opened up in some way. I think this project has gone above and beyond that for all of us in terms of the people that we've met, including yourself, Jacob, the people from the Forgiveness Project that we've had the absolute honour to work alongside, Joan and David themselves, the Longford Trust. I know you're a Longford scholar. It was really incredible to meet them. And of course, the real people who run Remedy, the restorative justice charity, and Wendy, your probation officer. It's been a really extraordinary experience from start to finish. And the reaction of the audiences has been just, again, beyond anything we could have hoped, really. They've almost become another character in the play. Their silence and their listening and their sobbing and their laughter throughout it has become like part of this experience for us, and the conversations that we're having afterwards with them as well.
If this story was a fictionalized story from James Graham, no one would believe it. The fact that it's true, it just resonates on so many levels and challenges on so many levels. I was aware of your story. I'd heard your podcast, which led me to read your book. Personally, I'm a huge fan of James Graham, so I wanted to be involved on that front. I had no idea of the scale and the impact that the story would have on the audience. And I've never, ever experienced the silence, the active listening in an audience. It's remarkable and it's electric and it's not a passive thing. It's really tangible. We were just saying before that afterwards, you know, a lot of people come up to you after a show and say, well done, or want to talk to you. But here, the audience are compelled. They need to talk to you. They don't need to hear anything from us. They speak at us about what they've just received. They're kind of slightly confused with what they've received, and they're having to decompress and make sense, and it challenges them on so many fronts that they're desperate to try and make sense and find some sort of calibration of what they've just experienced collectively, not as individuals. It's so whatever I've got myself into, and Julie's got, I don't think any of us in the company or in the cast could have ever anticipated that.
And I think that the fact that it's a theatre piece is really important as well. And you've talked about this, Tony, throughout this, is that, you know, obviously I've just been involved in Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, which was like the example that everybody holds up of drama really changing things, starting conversations to the point where legislation changes because of it. And that was a wonderful experience and amazing to be part of. But to actually see it happening and experience it happening in real time with a live audience is something quite different. Mm-hmm. And that conversation that takes place afterwards, it makes it extra special, yeah. I think. And I think that, of course, in theatre, you're not reaching the same numbers of people, but actually the real connection in it is something that no other medium can impersonate.
You guys are on the stage performing it. You've had great direction. You've had great lines. You've had a bit of feedback from me and input into the script and directing. I suppose you've both played lots of historically significant characters in the past or lots of different roles. What was the process in terms of getting into these characters and their duty of care? Or, you know, just, I feel like it's just how you guys have approached this project as much as everybody else as role in the creative process has led to the success that the show's had.
Possibly for me and Tony, and playing John and David, who are, of course, James's parents, bereaved parents. It's been quite different from David Shields, who plays yourself, Jacob, because he's had you as a resource throughout. And we didn't really have that. We had, obviously, the resources of podcasts and interviews that are in the public domain of John and David, but we didn't actually meet them until very late in the rehearsal process. And a decision was made quite early on that we wouldn't try to do an impersonation of their voices. They're from Suffolk originally, as they just wanted us to be other than Nottingham, and that was all that was important. So I can't really speak for Tony. I'm sure he'll talk about this, but for me, it was very much about trying to honour their story and their experience in a way that's authentic to us, rather than it being outside in. It wasn't hard, actually, with James's beautiful words, to put yourself very squarely in their shoes and imagine what it would be like to get a phone call in the middle of the night saying there's been this punch, to talk about having to turn off the life support machine and about the process of absolute despair that led them to this act of generosity that was turning Jacob's, your life around, you know. And that actually wasn't a hard thing for me to imagine as a parent myself. It was an astonishing thing, and I don't know whether I would have been capable of it. But what's been interesting is that that's just one strand of this, and it could be a very beautiful play about these three people, actually, Jacob, John and David, and about forgiveness. But actually, because it's James Graham and because he's our State of the Nation playwright, it's very much in a context of austerity, of bad architecture, of social housing, of a criminal justice system that isn't serving anybody, of the huge divisions and inequalities in our education system, and about how hard forgiveness is. And in the conversation that we had with the Forgiveness Project the other night in the talking circle outside, Jacob, the thing that I took away more than anything was that forgiveness is not a wafty thing that you just bestow upon yourself on other people. It has teeth. Mm. It's hard. And it comes from running out of any other option, just living with this terrible bitterness and anger and getting past that to something that heals yourself, other people, and the world.
Initially, in terms of your question of how we approached that, my first port of call, and I'm sure it was the same for Julie's, it's not about us. In terms of our ego or our agendas or even our politics.
Hmm. It's hard that though, isn't it?
It's really hard, but yeah. In this case, it was more important than ever that it's not about us. So and then you test the echo of the people who are involved, the authenticity of the writer and of Nottingham Playhouse, the creative team there. Mm. Their aim is absolutely true, and I think they feel the same way. This is a story that needs to be told, and it's not about us, it's about what happened. So you approach the character that point of view. David and Joan are remarkable. They're not just remarkable, they're remarkably ordinary. And I don't mean that in a pejorative sense.
I know what you mean.
It's really disarming. They're two very different characters as well.
Mm.
And they weren't always at agreement at some points, which I find fascinating.
Yeah.
So you kind of, as an actor, you trust the material that the writer gives you.
Yeah.
In this case, it's James Graham, so you're on pretty strong ground. Then you can mine as much information from the text, from circumstance, and you get a lot of that from talking to them. But ultimately, as actors, Julie has to make her choices on her lines as how she plays, and I have to make our choices. And there was one point in the rehearsal that was an absolute lesson to me, and I don't know about Julie, but it was unique. I've never experienced it as an actor, where Joan and David came to see a rehearsal.
Yeah.
And they were sat 7 feet away from us in an open lit, not a theatrical setting. You were there yourself, Jacob, but we'd kind of had a stronger relationship with you in terms of contact, and you'd seen the work a bit more in rehearsals.
But aware just as anxious but as you guys, perhaps.
Absolutely.
In a different way, because I didn't know how they were going to respond.
And it was great that they, again, had the generosity and the strength to come and see it in order to know what they were going to receive in the theatre. But there's a moment as an actor where Julie and I are doing a scene as Joan and David, turning a life support machine off. And again, we have a line that we know is written well and with integrity, but you have to make a choice as to how you're going to play that.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at David thinking, it's his son that I'm talking about. My first thought in that moment, in that scene, Julie, I don't know about, was who the hell am I to do that?
Yeah.
What kind of a fraud is this daft job that we do? And then actually, you check yourself and you go, actually, that is the essence of what an actor does. And actually, how really important that is.
Mm.
And what a responsibility you have to make sure that your choice is as accurate and as honest as it can be.
Yeah.
And I think I've found that permeates throughout the play with all the characters that I play, but especially with David. Nicola, of course, was also there at that rehearsal.
That rehearsal, the facilitator in the story,
Which was really important. And David and Joan and Nicola did have some tweaks in terms of language and pitch of certain things, which again adds to that authenticity.
It was changing all the time because of that, actually. And when we did BBC Breakfast, Jacob, a few weeks ago, and I met Joan for the first time on the eve of that, and we had a lovely hour together, and then you and James Graham joined us. After that conversation, James had a lot of changes to the script because there were things that she said that night that I'd perhaps heard in, you know, the very deep research that I'd done listening to everything she'd ever said on any programme or podcast, but that he hadn't been party to. And then that came into the script, and that made me happy. And I think that John and David's main wish was that James, their James, their son, was honoured and represented in the story. And I felt very certain of that. I felt that was something that we'd done really successfully, actually, that he is very present here on this stage, even though as a character he doesn't exist. And and that I think made John in particular very, very happy that he's honoured in that way.
And David said something to me, I'm sure he won't mind me saying, that he was concerned after, this was after the rehearsal, the first thing he said to me after the rehearsal, just as a story for the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
After we'd done those harrowing scenes and trod so carefully and painstakingly to serve their story. The first thing he said to me was he didn't like the cardigan I was wearing.
Yeah.
We changed the cardigan. But then he said to me after the first night, he was really worried and he was more emotional than he thought he would be. And I asked him what he was worried about. And he said that he was worried that the audience, people would say, why did you do that?
Enter the process.
And I thought about it. And I said, David, I'd be surprised if anyone in the audience thinks, why did you do it? I think the majority think, how did you do that?
Mm.
And it completely took him by surprise. And it's a calibre of the people of Joan and David that wasn't even on their agenda. But it isn't a question of why did you do it. For me, it's how did you do it? And I'm constantly, every night, going, how on earth? I don't know if I could.
Yeah, and you just don't wish anyone to be in that situation to have to make those decisions, do you?
No. And again, everything that comes at the audience, I don't think there are any absolutes.
No.
I think that's part of the reason why they jump up and need to share with us and why they need to sit and talk with us outside.
Yeah,
because they need to make sense. And
it is very conflicting, isn't it?
It's complex.
I've been thinking about this a lot as well, that not everybody is able to go on this same journey as David and John went on with you, Jacob. And part of that is because of your willingness to change your life around. And yes, they give you that opportunity by asking you those questions and engaging with you, but you didn't have to do anything with that. You didn't have to engage in the process at all. There was nothing in it for you at all on the face of it, because it wouldn't have shortened your sentence. You were already out when you engaged in the process. So it was the particular alchemy of those three people coming together. But also, I would hate anybody who has suffered that kind of loss to feel less than if they're not able to do this. I think it's a wonderful thing if it works for everybody involved, but it can't for everybody because of the unique set of circumstances that surround any loss or any crime. And I sometimes think about that. I think of the sort of weight of expectation now because of these kind of quite heroic, ordinary people of having to do that. And in the Forgiveness Project talk the other night, I said then, you know, I find it very, very difficult sometimes to forgive in the most banal moments of my life, you know. And so I think, how on earth am I even beginning to think that I'm capable of heroism? I do think that what everybody said was that, you know, actually those big moments, it takes years to get to that point. It takes years, and it comes from a necessity. Yeah. It comes from a need to move on from the bitterness and anger that's just eating you up.
It's almost an act of self-care.
Yeah.
It wasn't, we want to be righteous and make Jacob feel good, or help Jacob, and in return we'll feel better about ourselves. It was more an act of like, we want to tell him the harm that's caused. We want to reclaim our voice back.
Yeah.
We want to...
And we don't want another life
hold
to be wasted.
And we don't want another life to be wasted as well. And a combination of all those different reasons, and probably more, starting with questions and expressing the harm, having a voice, not wanting two lives to be wasted. A combination of all those things, it kind of like... The characters grapple with that, it actually might help them.
Yeah.
And I realised, oh, actually, I didn't think it was going to help me, but now it is helping me. And I was like, oh, I might have to lean into this, actually, because now I realise that I'm hurt and ashamed of what I've done. But what good's that going to do if I just... You just act that out negatively.
Forever.
Yeah.
Well, there's a great... This isn't a spoiler alert, because it's from a scene that got cut. But it always used to get me, because it works about so many things in the play, where a teacher that had in college had got hold of you and engaged with you and recognized in you your desire for improvement and change. A character called Derek in the play.
Yeah, we've had him on the
great
podcast. Yeah.
But in a line that got cut, when he's giving you the envelope with your GCSE grades, and he says, whatever these grades, they won't reflect the sheer scale of the endeavour, Jacob. They won't reflect the sheer scale of the endeavour. And I think that line works for so many people in the play.
Mm.
that think some things aren't resolved, some things are in conflict still.
Yeah.
Some people struggle with, you know, partners and loved ones, what they do. But the sheer scale of the endeavour, I find remarkable and deeply moving. And a lesson, actually. So in terms of what how it affects me, I just test myself all the time. We're so quick to judge and we're so quick to put ourselves in certain camps. We have a duty and a responsibility to step back and see a bigger picture, I think, and challenge ourselves.
Whole culture, isn't it? We talked about this the other day, Jacob, again, about the talking circle, you know, and that being a place of respect and listening and letting people have a different point of view, and how Parliament is set up. It's a complete antithesis of that. Yeah. It's like two sides baying at each other across a divide.
On rows.
Literally in rows, shouting at each other and shouting over each other. And it's just the absolute opposite of that. And so how are we supposed to live any differently if that's how our country is led? That's from top down and all the way down. That's what it is. It's about us just being pitted against each other, as I say. So it's given me a lot of food for thought about that, because I have very strongly held beliefs and opinions about things and about a way of trying to bridge those divides with people who don't agree with me on everything as well.
That's beautiful.
Are there parts of it that are painful for you to watch still, Jacob?
Yeah.
Which parts in particular do you find hard? Is it the stuff when you're younger, or is it the stuff with your mum?
There's some bits with my mum.
Yeah.
I hope you still want five minutes cuddle on the sofa with your mum when you're older. Mm. And it's just, it's almost just like a heartache to every other young kid who goes from primary to secondary school.
Yeah.
And like, no, you know, it's that other line in the play where at some point impressing your mates becomes more important than pleasing your mum. And I think those two scenes together kind of just like epitomise like the transition that a lot of parents and teenage children go through, which is quite, you know, heartbreaking for me. It's because, you know, but then the other part is in the second act, the bit at the end when Jacob shakes David's hand, that kind of gets me.
Yeah.
And just hearing,
gets me.
And then of course, you know, hearing about James.
Yeah.
And but I actually had to hear that. Do you know what I mean? Like that scene played out. But it's also, it could be interpreted as, well, it's just surreal, really, isn't it? But it was quite cathartic for you guys to be able to express and portray something that happened in a little room, locked away, with no one around to see it, other than me, Dave, and Joan, and Nicola.
Mm.
And for that such a profound conversation.
Yeah.
That had such a massive impact on my life, for you guys to being able to recreate it so well, because I've been trying to bang on about the power of restorative justice and the power of people being heard and seen and having these difficult conversations and the impact it can have. But no matter how good I am with words and public speaking, I'm never going to be able to really portray that in the way that we're able to do it in
well,
the
you
theater.
Need the context, don't you, as well?
Yeah.
You need the full context of everything that brought you to the moment of living that kind of life. And that's not unusual. You know, the life you were living at the time of the punch is a life that so many working class young men live. You know, you go out and have a fight on a Saturday night. You know, it doesn't end like it ended for you.
No.
But it's an incredible thing to take an audience on that journey, I think, and for them to see where it is. And I was worried about David and Joan watching the first part of the play, which seems to be a bit of a celebration of that kind of masculinity and everything. It isn't, of course. It's full of joy and life.
Yes.
But it has, you know.
And it sets it up for.
It sets
it's given
it
a
all.
Context.
It's completely the context of it. And I think that's what drama can do.
I have to kind of give a shout out for the power of theatre that, like yesterday in Parliament, MP brought
MP
it up, having been
play,
to Nottingham Playhouse to see the play. Judge in Chesterfield recommended a guy who knocked someone out with one punch in Chesterfield, saw it. And I think if, like you say, if you'd have done endless podcasts about restorative justice or written another book about it, it wouldn't have had the impact. And there's something unique about theatre that can politically drive things forward. And that's.
And get people. Not just understanding it, but feeling it.
Yeah.
Because it's a feeling, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
That this what restorative justice is.
That's exactly
is.
What it is.
Yeah.
And, but I think, but shout out to you, Jacob, as well, because I know that you are changing young people's lives all the time in the work you do. For you to be going into schools and prisons and talking to young people at the absolute coal face of this stuff, you'll be changing and saving lives with what you do. This is almost like an addendum. You know, it's something that we can, that is part of your story now, part of your journey, and another tool in your toolbox in terms of you spreading your message of anti-violence and and about a different kind of masculinity.
The play is about stories, it's about questions, it's about deep listening. We've gone on a journey on this podcast and gone down many rabbit holes, which is what the play provokes, isn't it? It means lots of things to different people. It has lots of characters from lots of different perspectives, and I think you can authentically put yourselves in each one of those characters' shoes. So I'm very proud of you both for working with me and helping share this story.
Proud of you, Jake.
Yeah, it's reciprocated wholeheartedly.
Yeah, and it's been a beautiful process, really. A privilege to have you both support
we're
me on this.
We're bound together forever now, aren't we?
Do I have to wear the cardi though?
What's your highlight of working on The Punch?
I think the talking circle the other night would have to be up there as something. Turning that corner from the stage door into the sort of forecourt outside the playhouse and seeing what I imagined was going to be about 20 people, and there being 200 people who'd come from after the play and wanted to be part of that conversation and stayed for an hour.
At 10:30 at night.
Yeah, yeah, 10:30 at night. I think at that moment, even more than the silences, the ovations, the tears you can hear in the audience, it was kind of like, I felt like all this work will continue out of the theatre and on. People have a need to express this stuff. And we talked a lot, Jacob, about language and about having an emotional language. And and I think this play helps people to gain that language, actually. Yeah. Even if it's a judge saying to a young lad in the dock, go and watch this play at Nottingham, you know, even saying those words and seeing it, it's like it's a new way of being able to speak about these things.
It sounds really cheesy, but it's honest. I've never, ever, ever known an audience's response to a piece of theatre collectively. And that is electric, not just in the theatre every night, but outside and beyond in, you know, in the bar, in the forecourt, in the city, and, you know, hopefully it'll ripple far and wide. It's been a precious thing that we've been asked to tell, and I think that's it's. We've been lucky enough to meet you yourselves, David and Joan, and it's been a privilege, not a job.
Well, thank you both so much for being on Right From Wrong. I wish you the best for the coming nights ahead while it's still on here at Nottingham Playhouse. I hope our audience has enjoyed having you both on the show, and we'll continue to have these important conversations.
Yeah, nice.
Thanks, Jacob.
Next week, I'll be talking to our State of the Nation playwright, James Graham, about what it was like bringing my story to the stage. Make sure you give this one a listen. This podcast was produced by One Fine Play. Matt Cheney is series producer. Kazra Ferruzia is the editor and writer. Thanks also to Selena Christofides for help with the visuals. I have been your host, Jacob Dunn, and this is Right From Wrong.